From VOA, Press Conference USA, here is your host, Carol Castiel.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. I'm your host, Carol Castiel. Our special guest on this edition of the program, His Excellency Arun K. Singh, Ambassador of India to the United States. And we're coming to you from the Indian Embassy in Washington. Ambassador Singh has over 30 years' experience working in India's Foreign Service. He has served in numerous posts since 1979, including in Moscow, Paris, Tel Aviv, Tokyo, and Addis Ababa. He served in India's permanent mission to the United Nations from 1993 to 1997. In New Delhi, Ambassador Singh also served in senior foreign ministry posts covering Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Iranian affairs. We'll be talking with the ambassador about the growing U.S.-Indian relationship, the large Indian diaspora in the United States, as well as regions in which India has key strategic interests, including sub-Saharan Africa. Recently, the Obama administration said that the bilateral relationship with the world's largest democracy, India, will be one of the defining partnerships of the 21st century. Mm-hmm. Ambassador Arun Singh, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Carol. Thank you for having me on the program, and thank you for being here at the embassy, a small bit of India in the United States.
Absolutely. We greatly appreciate your hosting us here. Ambassador Singh, I wanted to begin with the U.S.-India partnership. When the Obama administration says that the U.S. relationship with India will be one of the defining partnerships of the 21st century, how does India see that? Mm-hmm. Do you share that vision?
Absolutely. In fact, we share very much that vision. We appreciate very much the effort that President Obama himself has made to take this relationship forward. But what is interesting is that now one can say that there is broad bipartisan support for the India-U.S. relationship. I see that in my interactions on the Hill. But more than that, the new phase in the relationship was really started with President Clinton in 2000. President Bush took it forward significantly when he advocated and then led to the realization of a civil nuclear cooperation agreement between India and the United States. And that has completely transformed the relationship. President Obama, you may have noticed, was in India last year on 26 January, India's Republic Day, our National Day. And he was the first U.S. president ever to have visited India on our National Day, the Republic Day. Also, he's the first U.S. president to have visited India twice in his tenure. He had been there in 2010, then in 2015, and he has expressed U.S. support for India's permanent membership of the U.N. Security Council. So clearly, we do recognize the all-round support for the India-U.S. relationship within the United States, and we share the vision of it being a defining partnership for the 21st century.
What more would you like to see come out of this relationship?
I think the relationship is already evolving in a number of areas. Let's first take the trade and economic partnership. Our trade now is about $120 billion. It has gone up 5 times in the last 15 years. While these numbers may not be significant for the U.S., from India's point of view, U.S. is now our largest trading partner. So the number is significant itself and the growth that you are seeing. Going beyond that, I look at investment flows. U.S. has a significant investment presence in India, and this is growing. Just over the past year, several U.S. companies, General Motors, Ford, Qualcomm, others, have announced new investments in India. Looking at the emerging opportunities there. But what is also very interesting and something that is not noticed widely is that Indian companies now have a growing investment presence in the United States. In the last 5 years, Indian companies have invested $15 billion in the U.S. economy, have a presence in more than 40 states, and have generated 100,000 jobs directly. So that's the trade and economic dimension where we do see new trends and new things happening. Another growing area of partnership with tremendous potential for the future is our defense cooperation. Again, if I just look at the figures for the last 5 years, we have contracted to buy about $14 billion of defense supplies from the United States, more than what we have done with any other country over this period. And this is also significant because before that, U.S. has not really been a traditional partner for India in defense, but it reflects the new trend, the new opportunity. But what is sort of an additional dimension of interest is that we are now moving beyond just a buyer-seller partnership to co-development and co-production in defense technology. The two governments have identified 6 Pathfinder projects where we want to work together. And among those areas where we are looking at potential cooperation is aircraft carrier technology and jet engine technology. And if we are able to take this forward, it will certainly add an additional dimension to our relationship. But a third element I should add, which is not always there in the relationship between two countries, is the presence of the Indian origin population in the United States. Because ultimately, I believe that the strength of any relationship is provided by the people-to-people dimension of the relationship. And today, according to most estimates, we have about 3.5 million people of Indian origin in the United States. I'm given to understand that there are about 110,000 Indian doctors in the United States serving in remote parts of this country. And 1 out of 7 patients is seen by an Indian doctor. And also the presence of the Indian origin community in hotels, in the hospitality industry in the U.S. is again very, very significant, generating more than $13 billion of revenue and making huge contributions to taxes, to Social Security. So I would say it's really an all-round relationship.
No question, it's a two-way street. Certainly the members of the Indian American community, 3.5 million strong, are extremely important to our economy, mm-hmm. Mr. Ambassador. And let's not forget, in the realm of politics, we have a former Republican presidential contender, the former governor of Louisiana, Bobby Jindal, of Indian descent. We have a current governor of South Carolina, Nikki Haley. She's of Indian descent. And now there's talk, just talk for now, of a potential Supreme Court nominee, Sri Srinivasan. Mm-hmm. So this is really extraordinary, mm-hmm. the contribution of Indian Americans to the American economy and political
sure.
life.
Sure. So in fact, I think the significant presence of the Indian origin community in the U.S. is relatively recent. So at one level, the presence is of long standing and of long duration. Some have said that there has been an Indian origin presence in the U.S. now for more than 200 years. People have come at different times, particularly on the West Coast. But it is only over the last 15 to 20 years with our growing partnership in the technology industry that the numbers have picked up significantly. And once people have come and made the United States their home, have settled down there, then moving aside from the traditional areas of work like technology, medicine, universities, they are getting active in different parts of U.S. life. And now if you look around, you see significant presence in the administration, on the Hill, and of course getting involved in politics. So certainly as we move from one generation to the next of their presence in the U.S., their role in different parts of U.S. life and society will certainly increase.
Notwithstanding these very positive points of convergence between India and the United States, Mr. Ambassador, are there points of tension or areas of conflict that you can identify?
I don't think there are really any points of tension or conflict, but the essential issue is that we see a lot of opportunity. Last year in September, I had made several visits to the West Coast, to Silicon Valley, because the Indian Prime Minister was planning a visit for an interaction with the U.S. technology industry. And going there, looking at the trends there, we got a clear picture that the U.S. is a global leader in innovation, including in digital technology. But Indian origin tech entrepreneurs, Indian origin tech workers are an integral part of the U.S. being the world leader in innovation, including digital technology. So there is heavy linkage between our people involved in technology. And based on that, really, we want to create new opportunity. We are looking at partnership in innovation. In India, there is a lot of cost-effective R&D and development work happening. CEOs of many companies that I met, not just in the United States, but also in France or Israel, where I served earlier as ambassador, have told me that they are doing cost-effective R&D and development work in India, not just with an aim on the Indian market, but so as to remain globally competitive. Again, I'll give you just one example that in September 2014, a U.S. space vehicle reached Mars. Within a week of that, an Indian space vehicle reached Mars. And our access to the Mars has been generated through a very, very cost-effective R&D and development process. So there is a recognition of what is happening in India, and people do believe that there is a win-win partnership there for both of us.
Well, speaking of win-win partnerships, you brought up Israel, Mr. Ambassador. Mm-hmm. You served as ambassador to Israel. I was wondering if you could talk about India's relationship with the other rare democracy in the Middle East. Talk about the growing relationship. Your president paid a visit to Israel last year. Talk about the nature of that relationship and the fact that you also have very good relations with the Palestinians.
Absolutely. So we have now a good and growing relationship with Israel, and we have traditionally had a very strong relationship with the Palestinian people. And in terms of our relationship with Israel, where I served as ambassador, we established our diplomatic relations in 1992. At that time, our trade was about $200 million. Today, it's about $4.5 billion. You can see the change that is happening. And again, given the nature of the two economies and societies, we have a very strong technology partnership. And many of the Israeli companies who are strong in high tech have a significant presence in India. Again, keeping in mind the global market, because as you know, Israel is very strong in technology, but the population of Israel is about 7 million. And when I was in Israel, I used to point out that at one level, the population of Israel is 7 million. But at that time, we were adding 15 million new mobile phone subscribers in India every month. So if you're looking at an opportunity to scale up both in economic sense and in an engineering sense, what is being done. Clearly, a partnership with India makes a lot of sense. So there is a technology partnership. We have also good partnership in agriculture because Israel has made tremendous advances in terms of irrigation technology, in terms of seeds, in terms of agriculture management practices. So you know, we have looked at that, and there are several places in India where we've set up units in partnership with Israel as demonstration centers, as best practice centers, so that people can study that and see how they can be applied to the wider situation in India. So we are looking at those relationships.
You're listening to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our guest is His Excellency Arun Singh, Ambassador of India to the United States. And we're coming to you from the Embassy of India in Washington. And I'm your host, Carol Castiel. This is a reminder that our PCUSA podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or connect with us on Facebook. And here's a shout out to all our faithful listeners in Juba, South Sudan. Thank you so much for listening and registering your support for our programs. If you want to hear your name on the show, please send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA. Well, Mr. Ambassador, you know, having done a big shout out to our listeners in Juba in South Sudan leads me to ask you about the Indian-African relationship because we note that India is taking greater interest in Sub-Saharan Africa in particular. You just concluded the third India-Africa Forum Summit last year. Talk about your relationship with Sub-Saharan Africa. What are you looking to achieve?
So our relationship with Africa, with countries in Sub-Saharan Africa also, have had a traditional dimension, a modern dimension, and a potential for the future. In terms of the traditional dimension, we have a shared historical experience where we, in a sense, struggle together to emerge from that. You may recall that the father of our nation, Mahatma Gandhi, who had led the struggle for independence for India against colonialism, had for a long time, before he became very active in India, had led a similar struggle in South Africa against colonialism, against apartheid, and then he had come to India. After India had become independent, we had also lent our support to the decolonization processes in Africa. So that, of course, was the traditional dimension. Again, for historical reasons, there is also a strong Indian origin community in many places in Africa, which provides us an additional dimension to consolidating the relationships, the partnerships. But looking at the situation today, we see the economic relationships again as providing opportunity. There are similarities in our situation. We are all broadly developing countries, and we can benefit from each other's experience. And based on our experience and our strengths, we certainly want to be partners with Africa. And the India-Africa Forum Summit that you referred to was the third in its series. And through that mechanism, we've sought to share our experience. We've also tried to see how we can contribute to the trade and economic partnership. So far, we have contributed almost $7 billion worth of concessional assistance, and we've made additional announcements for about $10 billion going ahead. We have contributed more than $1 billion of grant assistance, and we have provided more than 25,000 scholarships for students from Africa. We are working on the Pan-Africa e-network. We are seeing how all this can work towards a virtual university, Pan-Africa virtual university. So there are different dimensions in which we are working together. And I think one has to realize that going ahead, a significant part of the world's population will be in Africa and Asia. And if you just look at the figures today, almost one third of the world's population is in Africa and India. And the bulk of our population, almost 70%, is a young population, about 30 years or less. So when we are looking at opportunities in the future, we are looking at a workforce for the future, a technical workforce for the future. Clearly, the Africa-India partnership will have a vital role to play.
And of course, there are many Indian communities as well, particularly in East and Southern Africa.
That's right. And again, they've had a historical presence there because of the linkages which predated colonialism and, of course, also during the colonial period. And those are there. But now, of course, we are building the modern partnerships and linkages there.
And to what extent can India be an important and positive, actually, counterweight to China, who is heavily invested, particularly in the extractive industries in Africa? I imagine that the Africans welcome, in many ways, the Indian investment and development assistance, as well as trade, because sometimes the Chinese are not seen in as much of a positive
light. We look at our relationship with countries in Africa in our own context and in the bilateral context of the India-Africa relationship. We don't really look at it through the prism of any third country. And I think there's enough opportunity in building our own relationship with countries in Africa in terms of manpower development, in terms of trade, in terms of investment flows, and not really bringing the factor of another country.
And are you focusing on any specific countries in the continent or just, you know, large trading blocks?
We're doing it different ways. We are looking at countries individually as we build our relationships.
Such as?
Name any country. And we have, you just referred
Kenya,
to
Nigeria.
You referred to South Sudan. Africa. We had a strong presence there, certainly Kenya, Tanzania, Ethiopia, Nigeria, South Africa. So you name any country, and the effort is to build a strong bilateral partnership. Then we are also looking at it at the regional level through some of the regional mechanisms, and then at the Pan-African level through the African Union and in the India-Africa Forum Summit.
Mr. Ambassador, I'm wondering if we could turn now to your region in general, South Asia. So much going on, whether Afghanistan, Pakistan. Let's look at Afghanistan briefly, in which India has many ties, many investments, very positive, irritating to some extent your neighbor, Pakistan, but we'll leave that aside for a minute. Efforts we know are underway to foster negotiations, for example, between the Taliban and the Afghan government. Does India support these efforts at trying to reach a peace deal and greater long-term stability?
Our basic approach has been that we would support any process that contributes to stability in Afghanistan. And also that we would support any process that is an Afghan-led and Afghan-owned process. Stability and peace in Afghanistan is vital to India's security because in the past, Afghanistan has been used to provide a base for terrorists who have then carried out actions in India. So after the unfortunate incidents of 9/11, when the US led a major effort in Afghanistan, we have been very active in contributing to the economic processes in Afghanistan. We have not been a traditional donor, yet we have given about $2 billion worth of assistance to Afghanistan. We have rebuilt schools, we have rebuilt hospitals, we have built a 300-kilometer road segment, we built a 300-kilometer power transmission line through high mountains that brought electricity to Kabul from the north, and we have done a large number of local community development projects. Most countries and aid donors have assessed that India's assistance has been extremely effective. And many public opinion polls and surveys that have been carried out have shown that today in Afghanistan, India is among the most highly rated and popular countries. Towards the end of December, the Indian Prime Minister had visited Afghanistan, and he spoke at the Afghan Parliament, a building that has been constructed by India and handed over to the Afghan people. And the kind of response in the parliament from the government, from the parliamentarians, showed clearly the deep emotional bonds between India and Afghanistan, between the people of Afghanistan and the people of India, and how much the people and the political leaders in Afghanistan value the economic engagement and support that India has provided. So we really look at the relationship in that context, and we do hope and work for there being stability in Afghanistan, and anything that can lead to that or contribute to that is something that we would support.
Mr. Ambassador, I wonder if we could turn now to the topic of climate change. Mm-hmm. This is, of course, an area of tremendous interest of President Obama. It's something that he wants to leave as an important legacy when he leaves office. We witnessed, of course, the COP21 talks in Paris last December. What is India's position regarding the talks? How did you come out of those talks? Because we know that India occupies an interesting position. On the one hand, it's an emitter of greenhouse gases. On the other, it would like to continue developing in such a way that could potentially, you know, adversely affect the greenhouse gas emissions. I mean, what are you doing to, on the one hand, continue developing and at the same time curbing these greenhouse gas emissions consistent with the COP21 statement?
Let me say that I think there's been a widespread appreciation of the role that India and the Prime Minister of India played in the summit that took place in Paris and in working towards a successful outcome that large number of countries were satisfied with. Our basic position has been that we have not really contributed to the problem of global warming, be it in terms of historical emissions or current emissions. Because even today, our emissions are less than 2 tons per capita. And those are 5, 6, or 7 times less than the per capita emissions of countries that are contributing to the problem of global warming in a significant way. So, however, although we have not contributed to the problem of global warming, we deal with the consequences of climate change, global warming, and we see it in different parts of India. We see it in some of our coastal regions. So going ahead, our effort is how do we deal with this challenge? And also, how are we mindful of the global situation as we develop India at rates of growth 8 to 10%? That are necessary for us to deal with the problem of poverty. And the fact that even today, more than 300 million people in India do not have access to commercial energy. Keeping all this in mind, the government has determined that to the maximum extent possible, we would like to do future growth on the basis of renewable energy. And we have projected that by 2022, we would like to do about 175 gigawatt of renewable energy, out of which we would like to do about 100 gigawatt of solar energy. And today we have only about 5 gigawatt of solar energy. Therefore, there is huge expansion happening in India at the moment in terms of solar power generation. And the expectation is that we should be able to reach our target. So this is really an area of growth. In India, an area of growth for India-US technology and trade partnership. So that's really our effort, that although we are not a cause of the problem, let us see how we reach our necessary future development mindful of the situation today.
Mr. Ambassador, turning now to trade in general, I read recently where India would like very much to join APEC, the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Forum. Where do things stand with respect to your membership? And can the United States help in your accession to this partnership?
Mm-hmm. For some time now, we have been looking at APEC with interest. You would have seen that in India, we have had, since 1992, what was called a Look East policy, which essentially signaled that we will make an effort to deepen our engagements with countries in Southeast Asia, with ASEAN and with others. Traditionally, we've had historical trade, cultural and other linkages with countries in Southeast Asia, and they've gone on for centuries. But perhaps there was a phase, especially during colonial times, when some of these linkages were disrupted. After independence, as our own economic and other situations strengthened and stabilized, we were once again looking at revitalizing these links. For the past 10 years or so, we have now been saying not look east, but act east. And our trade, investment, political and other relationships with countries in Southeast Asia have strengthened. Our relations with Japan have strengthened. Our relations with Australia have also strengthened. And we are also building more trade and economic linkages with China, political and other exchanges with China. I spoke to you about our relationship with the United States, which has strengthened in different dimensions. So there is a sense that India, which is today a member of most of the fora that are created or are present related to Southeast Asia and the Asia Pacific, the only major forum of which it is not a member is APEC. And perhaps not just India, but the countries in the region would all benefit from India's membership of APEC. So this is something that we are now looking at, we've been talking about. And certainly the United States, which is a leading economic power in the world, the leading economic power in the region, would certainly be in a position, if it believes that it is in its interest and its interest of APEC, to take this process forward.
I would like to conclude by briefly asking you your thoughts about countering violent extremism and terrorism around the world, not so much from a military standpoint, but, you know, combating the so-called narrative, this ideology that we're seeing that one cannot really characterize as religious because it has nothing to do with religion, but people are using religion, particularly Islam, for violent ends. India has a large Muslim population. You're a very peaceful country, an important democracy, the largest democracy in the world. What thoughts do you have with respect to strategies that we can all employ, all countries in the world, to combat this ideology or this narrative that we're seeing take hold around the world, particularly exemplified by ISIL, ISIS?
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for asking that question, because if you really look around the world today, the two countries where you see maximum degree of multiculturalism and pluralism are really United States and India. In India's context, many of the world's religions emerged from India: Hinduism, Jainism, Buddhism, Sikhism, and most of the other major religions of the world have found a welcome home in India: Islam, Christianity, Judaism. As I mentioned to you, I had served in Israel, and we have a 80,000 strong Indian origin Jewish population in Israel. And they used to tell us that India was among the few countries in the world where they never experienced any anti-Semitism, because we have an experience of different groups, followers of different faiths, living together in a framework of diversity, multiculturalism, pluralism, inclusion. And so I think that's important. So in today's context, that is an important message. And I think we can all work in the direction of the message of living in harmony amidst diversity. And I think that would be a relevant message for the whole world.
Arun K. Singh is Ambassador of India to the United States. Well, Ambassador Singh, thank you so much for your insights and for hosting us here at the Embassy in Washington. Press Conference USA on the Voice of America was produced in Washington. Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guest. Our engineer was Gary Jaffe, and I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.